Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis. Actually, that's not the case today. We're shifting the format a little bit. One bad, two crazies. And just to make things even a little more interesting, we're not talking about midterms or ISIS today. The bad martini is where we start, Jim. And bear with me as I read a little bit from this story on the front page of the Washington Post. As nearly two dozen Secret Service agents and members of the military were punished or fired following a 2012 prostitution scandal in Colombia, Obama administration officials repeatedly denied that anyone from the White House was involved. But new details drawn from government documents and interviews show that senior White House aides were given information at the time suggesting that a prostitute was an overnight guest in the hotel room of a presidential advance team member, yet that information was never thoroughly investigated or publicly acknowledged. Oh, but it gets better. It turns out the investigation from the Department of Homeland Security was still turning up some embarrassing information, and folks involved in that investigation felt pressured not to release the report until after the 2012 election because it was potentially embarrassing to the administration. The guy involved at the time was a 25-year-old Yale University law student, and here's the kicker. He started working full-time in the administration on a federal contract this year as a policy advisor in the Office on Global Women's Issues at the State Department. Jim?
Is it Global Women's Issues or Global Women's Affairs? Some might argue, Greg, that this is not the biggest scandal we've heard of with this administration. You could say this might not even be the biggest scandal we've heard with the U.S. Secret Service in the past week or so.
True.
But the bar has been set pretty high for that particular category. What makes this kind of useful and interesting, just recently kind of added as an update to a campaign spot post, is there are quite a few times in which someone will say something, you know, something is going badly. You know, Duncan Hunter Jr. saying, you know, we've captured a bunch of ISIS guys at the border, and DHS will say, no, that's not true. Well, now we know, without a shadow of a doubt, without any dispute, the government will lie. DHS will lie. They will, you know, hide information. They will tell people not to investigate things. They will tell the inspector general to delay investigations until after an election. And so when they say subsequently to this, like, we have good reason to be skeptical of everything else that they say because of this, because they've demonstrated that kind of contempt for the public's right to know, and the sense of accountability. And so, you know, we can put in a one-liner here about the war on women and stuff, and who's really, you know, treating women badly and things like this. But clearly, this is not an administration that really even thinks twice about, you know, just covering up and lying and making counter-accusations and things like that. It's just the way they operate. It's just the way they think. And it's rather appalling and you know, you got to wonder just how deep the rot goes in this entire administration.
All right, on to the first crazy martini now. And as most people know, it's been a pretty rough past 6 years for Meet the Press. For years and years, it was easily on top of the Sunday morning chat shows with Tim Russert being far and away the best moderator on any of those programs. Then if he, of course, tragically died suddenly, they replaced him with David Gregory, and the show just went down, down, down in the ratings. And they decided to relieve Mr. Gregory of his duties earlier this year. Chuck Todd ultimately got the job. But, Jim, we learned yesterday that Chuck Todd wasn't NBC's first choice, despite him being their chief political correspondent, their White House correspondent at the time. No, Jon Stewart, host of Comedy Central's Daily Show, who swears up and down he's not a journalist, was so much their choice that they were willing to pay him anything, and he still turned them down. So questionable judgment on the part of NBC, and questionable as to the value of some of these positions, if anything, still wasn't good enough to get Jon Stewart.
Yeah, I mean, actually, we got to give a little bit of credit to Jon Stewart for recognizing that him going to Meet the Press would not be a good idea. I think one of the fascinating things would be watching Jon Stewart without a studio audience or a laugh track.
Mm.
I think Jon Stewart, for all the times, you know, people might argue that he's biased or he makes more fun of Republicans or he kind of uses kid gloves on the Democrats periodically and things like that, that ultimately he knows he's a comedian, that he may, his, you know, and I think there's some part of him that at least feels a little bit of angst that his program is used as a substitute for watching the actual news or consuming the actual news, that people just watch the comedy program and feel like that'll tell them what they need to know about what's going on in the world. He would be a terrible host of Meet the Press. he's a really good host of The Daily Show. Like, he knows what he does and he does it well. It says, it really says a lot about NBC News that they would not be able to grasp the distinction or foresee that Jon Stewart, that if, you know, if you put Jon Stewart in that position, probably disaster would ensue. I think, you know, Chuck Todd turned out to be the right choice. I think that, you know, whatever you want to argue about his bias, I'm sure he doesn't come down the way you and I do on a whole lot of issues. I think he's enough of a political junkie and he asks enough tough questions. Let's face it, you know, the bar was set pretty low by his predecessor. But I think it's a little unnerving that NBC News didn't realize that, or this idea that, well, we'll get the young audience that way. All it would cost Meet the Press is its very identity of the serious, probing, deepest interview, meatiest discussion in the Sunday talk show world. In order to, you know, get a bigger audience, all they have to do is destroy everything they do. Destroy their very identity and turn it into a comedy show. And that's not the way it's supposed to operate. I don't know if the world would need The Daily Show on Sunday mornings as opposed to a really good interview show, hopefully making news every Sunday morning.
Yeah, that used to be the goal. Hopefully it still is, and actually informing the American people. All right, on to the second crazy martini, our third martini of the day. And Jim, it was just a couple days ago we were talking about Maryland Democrats and their poor leadership and the fact that they're going to get elected anyway in a state that's so heavily blue as Maryland. But outgoing Governor Martin O'Malley, who is kicking around the idea of running for president in 2016, made some news yesterday with a very interesting quote. He was talking about how previous generations, baby boomers and older, they aspired to grow in their careers and move out to the suburbs and have a big lawn and that sort of thing. And so they didn't want to be in the city. He says that's all changed. Quote, young people have flipped that on its head. Younger people are choosing to live in cities. They realize that connections to each other are making us better. That Wi-Fi is a human right. That proximity is important to entrepreneurship, access to capital and talent, and diversity. And Jim, as you well know, this blew up Twitter yesterday with some people making snarky comments like, now we can declare breakfast cereal a human right, and other people saying, if Wi-Fi is a human right, then nothing's a human right.
You kind of beat me to what I was going to say there. There's two observations. One is that, first of all, what he's saying about, you know, young people returning to cities, young childless people are returning to cities. People with children still continue to, you know, make an exodus to the suburbs. And there are a lot of reasons for this, but clearly one of the biggest and most driving factors is schools. Unfortunately, a lot of schools in a lot of big cities like Baltimore are in not so great shape. And in fact, in many cases, you know, terrible shape. While you can find exceptions, and we salute everybody who can build a good, thriving, successful public school in an inner city environment, a lot of them aren't that way. And every, you know, most parents want to give their kids the very best education they can. And they generally conclude that the best schools they can find are in the suburbs. Now, if you really want to bring families back to these cities, you would have to really improve the schools. But that's hard, Greg. We'll just add Wi-Fi, and that'll be great for the young single people and the dinks, the double income, no kids couples and things like that. And you know, that's, you know, one way you can build your city. Richard Florida does a whole lot of kind of urban studies, and his, on the one hand, he diagnoses a trend going on. I think the problem is that he tends to celebrate these young singles and the dinks and unmarried and all these types as the indicators of a thriving economy. When in fact, I kind of think, you know, like, you know, families with kids are the ones, as, you know, as a phenomenon you're no doubt even more familiar with now in the past week, creating the people who will fill in these cities a generation from now. And there's only so much you can build from a dink population. As for that, like, you know, the idea of saying Wi-Fi is a human right. I mean, now we've reached the point in which something I want is now synonymous with a human right. Yeah, and this kind of this degree to which the language is under assault by politicians who wish words to mean what they want them to mean instead of what they actually mean. The same way that people have turned unconstitutional into a synonym for I don't like it. These words do, you know, do have meanings, and the idea of, you know, a human right, you know, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, you know, these are certain things, you know, to be protected from harm or from crime. You know, these are things we can debate as being, you know, genuine human rights. The idea of something I want, you know, Wi-Fi, good heavens. So it's kind of interesting. Martin O'Malley seems really convinced that the country is clamoring for him to be president. And I, you know, the fact that he says things like this kind of indicates that he's just operating on a different plane of existence than we are, Greg.
I think that's certainly true. Although I'm sure when the folks in the northern part of Iraq and the border area around Syria hear about this, they'll be like, oh, no genocide. Yeah, that's important. Freedom of religion. That'd be nice. Wi-Fi. We got to add that one to the list.
Yeah, you're going to get crucified, but you're going to have a great signal.
It's all about perspective. Jim, fascinating day today. We'll do it again tomorrow.
All right, excellent. I'll see you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of Dash and Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.